Brandi Wilson.
And Jessica Smith.
And this is Hashtag Facts Matter. Thanks for joining us. This is our fifth episode, and this episode is all about
Surge Exchange!
Dun, dun, dun! What so many of you have been waiting for. We're going to talk about it this week. But first, we're going to talk about some community things.
Mm-hmm. Just a little recap. We're in the thick of holiday season. We did our annual Thanksgiving gathering feastness. we had food, and people came and got to eat turkey and mashed potatoes and all those fixins.
And pie.
And pie. Yes.
Shout out to Bill for making 6 pies.
Ooh, yay, Bill.
And 2 turkeys.
Wonderful. He's awesome. He's a fantastic volunteer. And so Christmas or the other winterish holidays, whatever you prefer, it's coming up. For us, we do an actual meal on Christmas. So we'll be providing, again, all the fixins, big turkey and ham meal, probably more pie, and also gift bags. So we're going to provide gift bags for our consumers that have super warm necessities, hand and feet warmers, socks, warm underlayers.
Thanks, Humboldt Area Foundation, for that. Yeah. They gave us the funding for both Thanksgiving and holiday bags and food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so super grateful to them for the funding for that. And yeah, if you're in the hood and you want some food, come on by.
10 to 2.
Yes. Tuesday.
We close promptly at 2 that day.
Yeah, because we got other things to do, too.
Uh-huh. A couple important community dates. December 21st is Homeless Persons Memorial Day. It's where we take time out to remember people who have died on the streets. We are co-sponsoring, co-hosting an annual event down at the Old Town Gazebo with AHA and PARC. Those are acronyms in the hell of acronym worlds. AHA is Affordable Homeless Housing Alternatives, and PARC is People's Action Resource Center. Them and a few other groups, I think, potentially are in the works, and other community members will all be there from like noon to 10 p.m. I don't know that I'll be there till 10, but lots of people will be there till 10. I think Jessica has a couple dates too.
Yeah, so I don't know if there's anything going on here locally, definitely in bigger cities, Scope, San Francisco, and maybe Oakland if you're nearby in the Bay Area. But December 17th is International Day to End Violence Against Sex Workers. Sex workers, they participate in harm reduction and should, right? We should support them, and they experience a lot of violence, often deadly violence, especially women of color and trans women who are enacting sex work. So it's just a day to remember those that we've lost, and talk about ways to prevent more of that horrible stuff from happening, which really comes down to policy.
So thanks for joining us for episode 5, Syringe Exchange. So on this first segment of Syringe Exchange 101, we're going to do a little bit about the history of Syringe Exchange. And, you know, there's different stories, like every good movement. It started in different places out of need. And I want to give a big shout out to Catherine Swanson of, she's a consultant. She's a longtime harm reductionist. And I did a double check with her today on the like who, what, when, where of who started Syringe Exchange. So what the lovely Catherine told me was that internationally it was first Junkie Bond in Amsterdam, and that started in about 84 or so. And then in America more specifically, there was a pilot project by the health department in New York, which failed. And that one started, but the one that really has been successful and the one that we all still acknowledge as really the start of syringe exchange in the U.S. was started by Dave Purchase in May of 1988. And Dave Purchase is the man who started North American Syringe Exchange Network. And they are the large warehouse and distributors of syringe exchange supplies throughout the entire country. Dave Purchase passed away early this year, but his legacy for sure lives on, clearly. And then next was Prevention Point in San Francisco, and that was November 1st, 1988, and it started on the 1st. It was in honor of the Day of the Dead. And so we have a long history and a lot of just research and science and facts and decades now of knowing what works and what doesn't work and how to ensure that people have healthy choices so that they can save their own lives and their own health. I think in the effort of really being true to like street level activism is, I think what could be cool is a future episode if we have a few quote unquote old timers.
OGs.
OGs, yeah, yeah. Ooh, they'd be a little huffy at me if I called them old timers, maybe. don't tell Catherine. But definitely some OG harm reductionists. I think a great conversation would be to just like have them talk about it.
Mm-hmm. The whys, the wheres, mm-hmm. the whens.
Notes for future harm reduction podcasts. All right, so we'll move on to the next part.
So now that we've given you a little rundown of the history of syringe exchange programs, we're going to talk about the benefits, because obviously we're doing it because it matters. It matters to not only the people that it serves directly, but also the rest of the community indirectly, because when one population, especially an extremely marginalized population, is healthy, everybody else is going to benefit from that. So the biggest thing that we see with syringe exchange programs is the prevention or reduction of disease transmission, especially those big ones, Hep C and HIV. And this has been well documented for multiple decades that giving people who inject drugs clean syringes in fact reduces the rates of HIV and Hep C, and it benefits their health in other ways. We're talking less abscesses, less chance of sepsis, anything negative that could happen from using a dirty or dull syringe. Syringe exchanges are gonna curb that.
And so if, even if the human aspect of that, the disease transmission prevention aspect doesn't grab you as important and you're more a fiscally minded person, many people who are living with these diseases, it costs taxpayers in multiple ways. And so if the human aspect doesn't grab you, it reduces the amount of taxpayer dollars going to treat these diseases. It greatly reduces that.
I got some numbers.
Oh, we have some numbers. Yes.
So treating a single case of Hep C can cost anywhere between $100,000 and $500,000. And then a lifetime cost for medical care for HIV is over $400,000. And so when we look at that amount of money, the equivalent amount that can be spent on syringe exchange programs prevents at least 30 new HIV infections. So we're talking, you know, cents for syringes versus hundreds of thousands of dollars for treating people. And unfortunately, the reality is that a lot of folks who are also experiencing houselessness or who are low income may be using these drugs. So they're using things like Medi-Cal. And so that's gonna fall on the taxpayers. So why not give them preventative health the way that we give preventative health to everybody else and save everybody some money?
And so as we talk about that, then, you know, we hear a lot of people say, yes, but it costs us, you know, safety due to your syringe litter. Well, let's talk about the benefits of syringe exchange. Syringe litter isn't prevalent because there are syringes. There always have been. Not always, but since syringes were created, there have been syringes improperly disposed of. The evidence and research repeatedly, time and time again, show that it is access to disposal that lessens syringe litter, and that is exactly what syringe exchange does. It provides access to disposal.
Right. And if, you know, you think about, we hear people lumping people who use drugs into one big category as, like, irresponsible, and they don't care, and they're too high, they're just gonna throw their shit wherever. I'm trying not to curse this time, because we're on Kama now. sorry.
It'll be fine.
But that's, it, like, there are humans, regardless of what you do or don't do, that leave their trash because that's just the person that they are. It's not there that way because they use drugs. It's just there that way. So what we see is that when people have the opportunity to come and get new rigs and they know that they have to bring their dirty ones back, they're going to do it. And if you occasionally get that one bad apple who's like, well, I just don't care and I'm going to throw my bottle and my trash and my syringe, then we address that. We're like, well, if you can't be responsible, then we can't help you help yourself either. But for the most part, people, they want to utilize the service. They want to be helpful. They know that others are potentially judging them and thinking that they're doing this horrible thing. And so they don't want to be looked at like that. They have, some of them have children too, and they think that it's horrible that syringes may be on the ground. Mm-hmm. Sorry, ran off on a tangent. but yeah, access to disposal is really what helps lessen litter. Syringe exchanges have not been shown to increase syringe litter. A lack of disposal options is what does that.
Okay, and the last benefit of syringe exchange programs that we're going to talk about, it's definitely not the last one, but the last one we're going to talk about, is increased entry into services. That historically has been shown to be one of the really big benefits, because the more chances someone has to engage with someone over time and build a relationship, the more likely that person is going to voice their needs, wants, or desires in that space, which, da-da-da, helps us get people into services.
Yeah, I mean, deciding on detox or rehab or even just trying to find a primary care doctor can be a scary, overwhelming process. And so when folks come to syringe exchanges and, you know, see someone regularly and know that they care about them and want to help them, they feel more emboldened and encouraged to reach out and say, hey, like, I need help with this thing. And we have some more numbers here as far as how helpful SEPs are, and specifically related to detox or any sort of other drug treatment program. So folks who participate in syringe exchange programs are 5 times more likely to enter some sort of drug treatment than non-participants. So we definitely see people all the time coming to us saying, hey, I'm ready, can you help me do this? And then we also have people just saying, hey, I need to get to a doctor, or I need to get to the welfare office, or I need to get food stamps. So, yeah, we see it in action.
There's definitely more, but in the interest of time,
We're moving on.
All right, this next segment, we're going to talk about how it works and best practices. So Jessica is going to talk about how syringe exchange works, because I don't directly deal with that anymore. She's really taken on that role and she's doing a great job. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about best practices, because we say, like many other folks, you know, we follow best practices. And when we say that, we have made the mistake of really assuming that everyone's starting from the same starting place in what we mean by best practices. And so in an effort to have common understanding, we're going to talk about what that means for us And so first we're going to start with a definition. Thanks, Merriam-Webster. And it is, best practices is a noun. Commercial or professional procedures that are accepted or prescribed as being correct or most effective. Yep.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we do. And where ours come from. So we told you a little bit about the history. And since that time when syringe exchange started, data has been being collected by programs, by researchers, by doctors, by psychiatrists, by all the people. And report after report, research after research, it's collected, it's analyzed, it's produced, it's reviewed by other people in the field and outside of the field to ensure like what parts are flawed and what parts are not. And by and large, the things that our organization does are straight up best practices as defined by doctors, scientists, and harm reduction for the past 35 plus years. We do not adhere to any type of belief that magical ideologies, or that just because I believe something doesn't make it true. We believe in facts, and we believe in evidence, and we believe in science. And so now we all understand what best practices is. Jessica is going to tell you what we do and how we do it and how others might do it. Different models, all sorts of things.
All sorts of things. So first, just the most basic idea of syringe exchange. Dirty syringes come back to us and then clean ones go out. And sorry, I want to actually frame how I just said that. Used syringes, right? Dirty is something that we hear a lot from the public, so sometimes it can get stuck in our head, but we try to stay away from words like clean and dirty in all sorts of usage, whether it's talking about sobriety or syringes, because you aren't clean or dirty because you use drugs. You're clean or dirty because you may or may not shower. But we don't pass judgment about that either.
Nope.
So, yes, use syringes, come back, and then use syringes, go out.
Nope. Sterile ones go out.
Sterile. I'm all wonky. Definitely not used ones. Sterile ones in packages go back out. So, sorry, guys.
We promise best practices. So, to reiterate what Jessica said, she said, use syringes, come in.
Clean.
Sterile ones go out. All right.
Sterile unused ones, yes. So, various models for that. It's okay. Various models for syringe exchange. I will start first by talking about, at least for us here in California, best practices as dictated by California Department of Public Health, Office of AIDS, is a needs-based approach. That means folks come in with a used syringe and they can get back as many syringes as they feel like they're going to need to stay safe, to have, you know, sterile and clean and not dull equipment every time they use. CDPH says that, you know, the best way to prevent diseases and to prevent abscesses and all of this all of those important keys to health is to have people who inject drugs have a clean, unused, sharp syringe every time. So that's one way. You know, people can come in, maybe they bring 10 and they say, I need 100 this time, and that syringe exchange would provide 100 syringes. Then there's things sort of in between that are more like a progressive needs base, which means, you know, someone comes in with 10 and maybe the syringe exchange has decided that 20 to 50 is a fair number, you know, not as many as you'd like, but you need more than 10, so we can provide you more than 10. And then there is a one-for-one exchange, which is how we operate right now. We understand that that is not best practices, and it's not our most favorite thing to do because we really want to ensure that the folks that we serve have what they need and can stay safe, and then the rest of the community also stays safe. But that is when a person comes in and they bring, say, 5 used syringes and they get 5 back. So we have operated in that way because of community pushback. But again, it's not advised. It hasn't been shown to reduce syringe litter, and it hasn't been shown to reduce disease transmission. Again, you know, the models sort of vary. Even with needs-based, like, a community is going to be able to know what that means for them. So if they're really not having any sort of issues with syringe litter, and, you know, they know all of their folks that are coming in, and they bring back all their syringes, and sometimes they need, you know, hundreds at a time, and that works for them, then that works for them. That's the beauty of operating something like this, is that you're getting to know the folks that you serve, you're building those relationships, and you know who's doing what and who isn't following the rules and such and so forth. So we also take those sort of things into consideration when we do syringe exchange. If people are constantly coming back with one or no syringes, then we address that. You know, we can only do so much, and sometimes that involves only one or no syringes.
Jessica does a really delicate dance of, you know, gauging disease prevention, needle litter, and people's needs.
And also the outside community, what they're yes. saying. And
Jessica has been a really, really, really great trooper on this. We make a great team in that way because, mm-hmm. yep, she can enforce some of the things I can't. And we really gotta say thanks for Jessica and all of her work, because this job is not easy. And sometimes it can be even rougher in a community that wants your head. But luckily, we're a little past that now. So,
yay.
Now we're gonna move on to policy. I've been waiting.
Yes.
All right. Okay, in this segment, we are going to talk about policy. Jessica had a little rant earlier. We deleted about policy because we wanted to wait till the right thing, till the right segment. But by and large, everything that is right or wrong around substance use and a whole lot of other things too is policy, good or bad policy. Policy can put people at risk or create safety for not only themselves, but the community, law enforcement, first responders, us, everyone. Mm-hmm. So first we're going to talk about California syringe exchange or syringe policy and why that is important. So a couple years ago, the health and safety code around selling syringes without a prescription was changed, and it is now legal, meaning pharmacies, you know, CVS, Walmart, what have you, can sell syringes for people with syringe needs, which are more than just people who use drugs. It's also people with diabetic needs. Sometimes people have to give their animals vaccines, all sorts of things.
Hormone injections.
There are syringe needs. So it's great that that was changed, because that reduces the likelihood of someone reusing a previously used syringe, which, as we talked about earlier, disease transmission. Mm-hmm. So syringes technically are paraphernalia, according to, you know, California, unless you get them in any of the prescribed ways. And one of them is by way of a syringe exchange. And what that does, the reason why, is because, as we talked about earlier, syringe exchange increases communication, entry into services, all of those things. So if someone has a syringe and they are connected to a syringe or any other using paraphernalia, and they are connected to a syringe exchange, and let's say they have an instance where they are in an encounter with a law enforcement officer. Health and safety code states that if that person tells the officer that they have sharps on them, then those sharps, if they were got from a pharmacy or a syringe exchange, they are not a citable offense and they are not paraphernalia. The reason why this is important is because if an officer asks if someone has sharps and they are afraid to tell them yes because they're afraid they're going to get thrown in jail, they're going to tell them no, which means the officer is now unaware that there are syringes, which means the likelihood of an accidental needle stick is going to go up. And so the policy around that creates fear. And the fear is what creates issues of unsafety for law enforcement. So let's have that same scenario again. Someone who has syringes on them is in an encounter with a law enforcement officer. The law enforcement officer asks them if they have syringes, but this time the person is in California, they're connected to a syringe exchange, and there has been enough encounters with law enforcement for them to know that health and safety code is going to be upheld, that the person then can say yes, tell the officer where the syringes are, and then that person will not be cited. That's the law. And that makes it so, one, the officer is now much more safe. There is less likelihood of an accidental needle stick. And if there is an accidental needle stick, that person being connected to an exchange, the likelihood of any needle they are carrying having disease is way, way less. It also creates a situation where a relationship that isn't built predominantly on animosity between law enforcement and the person can begin, which means that solutions can be found in the future, right? So that's just one example of good policy, and also how it can be bad policy. You got any policy rants? I'm sure you do.
Yeah. So just sort of speaking to law enforcement and those encounters, you know, even if it's the law and we make sure that our consumers are very aware of that law, we send them out with a little card that has the actual health and safety code written on it. And on the other side, it says, I am a consumer of Hatcher. I've been trained how to use syringes properly. I know how to carry and use naloxone, all of these things. If law enforcement still doesn't acknowledge that that is the law and what our consumers are doing is actually legal, it can actually result in more syringe litter. If people are fearful of law enforcement and they know that every time they run into a cop, they're going to either ticket them or arrest them because of their syringes, they're just going to leave them. They're going to leave them in, usually in their sharps containers somewhere, but sometimes they won't have a container and they'll leave it on the street because of that fear, because law enforcement isn't upholding the law. And yet, the good policy also just, the policy that makes syringe exchange legal and feasible in California and makes the sale of syringes by pharmacies without prescription, that policy is good policy because it's rooted in facts and evidence and data, right? California said this is necessary for the health and well-being of all of our communities. And the fact that we were authorized here and that we're authorized by the state of California is because they recognize the need, right? So we want to encourage that sort of good policy that puts these things, that really is looking out for the health and well-being of everybody, not just the folks that we serve directly, but the whole community, because you're addressing the spread of diseases, you're addressing, you know, healthcare costs if the most marginalized folks who don't always have access are now getting preventative medicine, essentially, preventative health care.
One last rant about that rant, about policy. So one more way that frivolous citations and incarceration that aren't a part of the law, one more way they're wasting our tax money, is that our overcrowded jail that can't hold people that, you know, run over their child and their child's friend and leave them for dead. Our jail can't hold people like that because we're too busy putting people in jail and citations for doing things like having possession of syringes when it's legally okay for them.
Sleeping on the street.
Yeah. We also saw one recently that one of our folks had to take it all the way to trial. They got charged with possession of heroin when all they had was a reagent kit, and even the test came back that it wasn't heroin. Our system here decided to take it all the way to trial. So as we're talking about, you know, our jail is full and this and that, well, if we work on adhering to policy, then maybe we will be able to keep violent offenders in jail and find real solutions for people battling substance use issues.
Hear, hear.
Think that rant's over. It's a long podcast this time. All right, so that's a wrap on episode 5, Syringe Exchange 101.
Mm-hmm. It was very ranty and kind of long, but hopefully you like it. We're passionate.
And we still barely even, that's only a drop in the bucket when it comes to Syringe Exchange. Like, mm-hmm. We go to whole conferences on this. So clearly our 30 plus minutes of this did not do it justice. So we're going to talk about it more, but not next time. I don't know what we're going to talk about next time.
I don't know either.
It'll be something great.
A little recap on the holidays, tell you how Christmas went, talk about some really important things.
Yeah.
Probably.
So that is all we've got. But as always, we want to leave you with a little note, and that is that our podcast is in part funded by the Syringe Access Fund, a funding collaborative of AIDS United, Elton John AIDS Foundation, the H. Van Amerigen Foundation, the Levi Strauss Foundation, and the Open Society Foundations. Thank you to them. We're really, really, really honored to have a sponsored in part podcast. Makes us feel kind of fancy and supported. And thanks for listening. And we hope you enjoyed it. Got a little bit of information. Yeah. Got any parting words, Jessica?
You guys are awesome. Thanks for listening. There's going to be some links as usual in the little description part. So check that out. It's pretty much a link to California Department of Public Health website and the page specific to Syringe Exchanges, and it'll give you all sorts of details and information and research and that health and safety code and everything you could ever want to nerd out on.
Best practices we talked about.
Yep.
All right. Bye.
See ya.